This is Frankly MSP, where managed service providers get real.
Hey, and welcome to episode 10 of Frankly MSP, the podcast for managed service providers who want to boost their productivity, efficiency, and profitability. I'm your host, Jennifer Tribe. Today on the show, I'll be talking to Rex Frank, the founder and CEO at C-Level Operations. We'll be talking about the four different levers a service desk manager can pull to affect gross service margin either up or down. Rex has been a service manager, a CTO, a VP managed services, and a director of operations at various MSPs over the last 20 years. And he helped grow those companies and those teams using a keen focus on some of the metrics we're going to be diving into today. But of course, before we get to that very interesting conversation, we kick off the episode with our What's Going On segment, where MSP consultants Richard Tubb and Carl Palachuk take a look at what's happening in the world and how it affects MSPs.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avic Networks.
Hi, everyone. Richard Tubb here at home in Newcastle-upon-Tyne in the northeast of the UK. We're talking what's going on, and I'm joined by my good friend, Carl Palachuk. And where do I find you in the world today, Carl?
I'm at home, but I'm on my way this week to SMB Tech Fest.
Well, there was almost a slip of the tongue there, wasn't there? Because the big news, we've got to talk about this straight away, the big news that's dominating the MSP and the IT industry is the news that ConnectWise has acquired HTG. So you and I are both former members of HTG, but for anybody not familiar with HTG, how would you explain the Heartland Technology Group to others?
It's certainly a peer group, but it's almost a peer group at another level. So the HTG has been, I guess, in love with ConnectWise for more than 10 years. This marriage has been a long time coming, and I don't know that it's really a surprise to anybody, but the peer groups are actually run by peers. Many peer groups are run by coaches, but the HTG is run by the members, and one member sort of coordinates everything, and they're, you know, about 10 people. They tend to be larger groups, and over the years have tended to be more and more ConnectWise partners versus Autodesk or SolarWinds or somebody else.
Yeah, and it certainly wasn't always that way. So I've already alluded to the fact that you and I, Carl, were both members of HTG, the Heartlands Technology Group, back in the day. Certainly when I started as a HTG member, I wasn't a ConnectWise partner when I ran an MSP. But I think it was probably, if memory serves me, probably around 2008 that HTG almost brought in the rule that you've got to be a ConnectWise partner to be part of HTG. Would that be right?
Yeah, so I started out, I was 4 years as a ConnectWise user, and then I switched to Autodesk. And so when HTG made a deal, their original deal was that they want to encourage people to use ConnectWise. And so they encouraged people who were Autodesk members to go find other peer groups. And they didn't force people out by any stretch of the imagination, but it was clear that there was going to be a lot of synergy going forward. And so they kind of made that transition, like you say, about 10 years ago.
And for anybody who's not familiar with HTG, I mean, you've already mentioned that it's peer groups on another level. To use a soccer analogy here in the UK, I always described HTG as the Premier League of peer groups. So there's some considerable heavy hitters in there. There's some wildly successful MSPs that are a part of these peer groups. And at the last time I was looking, I know there was a limit of 250 members worldwide. I was chatting to Arlen Sorensen, who's the founder of HTG, a few months ago, and I know they've done away with that limit now, and they're looking to make it even bigger and better. But some of the top MSPs in the industry are part of HTG, aren't they?
Yes, and they've sort of got this reputation of being the larger MSPs and the more successful MSPs. So the result is that even when they have a conference and they have, quote unquote, only 250 members, vendors will show up because they realize these are 250 members who spend a lot of money, invest in their architecture, so forth and so on. They sort of play on that, hey, we're at that level. We're slightly bigger, slightly more successful than everybody else.
Yeah. And Joe Panettiere over across at Channel ETE first broke this news of the ConnectWise and the HTG. I was going to to say merger, but it's definitely ConnectWise acquiring HTG or bringing them on board. And Joe actually reports that the HTG and ConnectWise, they seem to be targeting a partner base that generally includes customers with 500 to 100 million in revenue. So definitely $100 million, I should say that is. Definitely near the upper end of the small business MSP space.
Right, exactly. And the other thing is there are still today many members of HTG that are very small shops and have been members forever. Like I said, they didn't kick anybody out just because they didn't fit the emerging profile of the new HTG. I will also say HTG over the last, say, 12 years has gone through periods of expanding and then setting limits. And then they have an add-on where you can do online peer groups. And they've tried different classes and various things. So I think that they have grown and then stayed in one place for a while and then grown a little more and sort of work their way up very gradually to where they are today.
Mm. And as a former HTG member, I was a founder member of HTG 11, which was the first UK group. You were part of HTG 13, would that be right, Carl?
I think 11, 12, and 13 were all started at exactly the same time. They just literally said.
So we started around the same time then, didn't we? But I've always, I can't say enough good things about HTG as a former MSP owner myself. I mean, it really did give me a phenomenal foundation within the industry. I've learned so much. I include Arlen Sorensen, the HTG founder, as something of a mentor. I've learned an incredible amount off him. So looking back, HTG was a great thing for my business. Going forward, what do you make of this, the marriage, as you call it now, the formal marriage between ConnectWise and HTG? What does it mean for MSPs who are currently members? And secondly, what does it mean for MSPs who are considering becoming members of HTG?
Well, I think there's not much change for people who are members. This has been coming in so obvious for so long that I can't imagine anybody woke up and went, oh my gosh. But for new members, it is clearly a move to get into ConnectWise, right? This is, if you want to be in what they consider to be the premier group, then you have to be a ConnectWise user. And clearly, when you've got the base of ConnectWise growing all the time, then you've got a base of potential HTG members growing all the time.
Mm, absolutely. And I think if I was a ConnectWise MSP using the ConnectWise product, I would definitely see this as a positive move because there's the wealth of experience and knowledge within the HTG peer groups. As we've said, they really are like the Premier League of MSPs. So this can only be a good thing for ConnectWise users, really.
Yes. The other thing is that many peer groups have tried at some point to be a collective purchasing organization to get good prices for their members. And very few organizations have succeeded at that. HTG certainly has. And the other peer groups, the Baring McKinley peer groups and the Taylor Business Group and others, just haven't gone down the road of doing the buying piece of it.
Mm. And I'm also intrigued. I mean, we've talked about what this is going to mean for ConnectWise MSPs, for future MSPs who might be thinking about joining HTG. All looks rosy, all looks positive. But let's talk about the vendors as well, because, of course, ConnectWise is not the only vendor in the space, particularly Datto, Autotask, Continuum, some of the other people that we might consider rivals to ConnectWise out there. How do you see this ConnectWise HTG merger affecting them?
Well, again, because they've been so close for so long, I think the only real effect on others is going to be that there will be a handful of people who are Autotask users in HTG who now will probably feel much more pressure that they need to move on to another organization.
Mm, indeed. And of course, one of the big channel events of the year is ConnectWise IT Nation. That's always run alongside in Orlando, Florida. It's always run alongside the HTG Worldwide Summit there, HTG All, as it used to be called when I was a member. I would imagine those two events are going to be coordinated together going forward. Would you think that?
Absolutely. Yeah. When HTG first started, they were not connected. And it's probably, like you say, probably been 10 years that they have tried to do them more and more together all the time. Mm.
Well, on that topic of coordination of these big channel events, let's talk about the other news that's come out in the past few days. And this is the news reported across at Datto.com that Datto have combined DattoCon, their big channel events, with Autotask Community Live. And so they're talking about it's creating the world's largest MSP-centric event that's going to take place later on this year. So what do you make of that? Is this consolidation on Datto and Autotask part? Is it in response to this HTG ConnectWise news? What do you think this means to the industry?
Well, at some level, it's not really a response. It's a natural outcome of the fact that Datto bought or was combined with Autotask. But the interesting thing is that for years now, probably 5 years now, everybody wants to claim that they have the biggest community, the biggest event, all of that. And so IT Nation has been, for several years now, the absolute biggest event in the space. And so to say that you're going to go up against that and between Autotask and Datto bring together more people than IT Nation, that will be something else. And of course, that brings in more vendors, right? You get thousands of people in a room instead of hundreds. And you take your vendor footprint to a whole new level.
Well, the press release for this DattoCon, the merger almost with Autotask Community Lives, talks about more than 1,200 managed service providers gathering for DattoCon 18, which is going to take place in Austin, Texas, June 18th through to June 20th. So two big events coming together there. 1,200 MSPs, is that going to be as big or bigger than IT Nation? My gut feeling says there's going to be probably more than 2,000 people at IT Nation, but 2,000 MSPs, I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, it's hard to know the math because, yes, I think IT Nation has been the last couple of years right at the 2,000, 2,100 mark. But if you took 1,200 MSPs and they each bring two people, well, you've exceeded that. So
indeed,
we'll see.
Yeah.
And of course, not everybody's going to go.
Not everybody's going to go, exactly. Yeah. So it's interesting times for the MSP industry. Of course, we're focusing on talking about Autotask. We're focusing on talking about Datto, ConnectWise, the very big players here. I'm intrigued. Do you see this as an opportunity for some of the smaller or dare I say unknown players in the market or unknown to us sort of taking a hold and saying for anybody who's not interested in working with these huge, big software companies, there's going to be alternatives for them? Is there anybody who's caught your eye out there?
Well, certainly SolarWinds is trying a similar thing. What's happening industry-wide is that more and more people are trying to create these one-stop shops, which has a certain appeal, right? If you buy the entire stack from a certain conglomerate, you know, everything is supposed to work together. It doesn't necessarily always, you know, when they're buying up things and integrating them. But there's also a certain group of MSPs who say, well, I don't want to choose my PSA and my RMM based on the antivirus product I like. So sometimes you don't want to buy the whole stack. You can go either way. And there's an appeal to both ways. So, but the big conglomerates, there's a point at which you have to meet your numbers and you've got investors and so forth. And you have to grow at whatever it is, 15, 18, 20%. And that is going to drive the way you make decisions and how you operate.
Absolutely. Intriguing times for the MSP industry. My gut feeling, Carl, is that we're actually going to see some new players in the market, or if not new players, people that we've not heard of before, PSA and RMM people jumping up and taking advantage of this. So we will watch this story with interest. But will you be going to either IT Nation or DattoCon this year?
I actually don't know. I'm beginning to schedule my plans for the year. And part of it is I can't lose money going to these events. So I have to figure out how I'm going to pay for it. So we shall see.
Cool. Well, hopefully I'll see you there at one of those events. But that's what's going on. What's going to be going on over the next couple of weeks for you, Carl? Are you out and about? Are you traveling?
Yes, I'm going to SMB Tech Fest this week. So in a couple of days, I'll be there in Anaheim as usual. And then I'm home for a couple of weeks, and then I'm going to an ASCII event. Oh,
okay, so plenty of stuff to keep you busy over there. What about your own personal plans? Have you got anything cool in the works, cool coming through the system that we should know about?
Well, of course, I like to always think my stuff is cool, but I did announce over the weekend my dates for the SMB roadshows that I'm doing this year. And so I've got I think, six cities and dates posted up at on SMB Roadshow. And then I'm also working with Baring McKinley to generate some interest in managed services in a month branded peer groups.
Interesting, especially given what we've just been talking about with ConnectWise and HTG. Exactly. There. So perhaps more on that next time. But for now, thank you, Carl, for joining us. That's what's been going on, and we'll look forward to speaking to you next time.
You're listening to Frankly MSP.
As always, I'll put links to the articles and resources Carl and Richard discussed in today's show notes at auvic.com, auvic.com/franklymsp/010. Now we come to my interview with Rex Frank at C-Level Operations about the various ways a service desk manager can affect gross service margin for an MSP. Rex is a coach and consultant to MSPs at C-Level, where he teaches the systems he developed and honed during his years on the MSP front lines. There is a ton of fantastic detail in this call, so adjust your volume to a comfortable level, get rid of any potential distractions for the next 15-ish minutes, and let's get started. Hi, Rex. Welcome to Frankly MSP.
Hey, good morning.
Well, today we're going to talk about service profitability at an MSP and things a service desk manager can do to affect that profitability. Now, Rex, I know you have a list of items, you call them levers, that service managers can pull that can change the profitability for an MSP up or down. So tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, at C-Level, we've been talking about the four levels that control service gross margin. The first lever is really set when you're deciding how much you're going to pay each of your engineers. The second lever is going to be your billing rate. That's how much you charge your clients for their work. And then the third lever is going to be their billable utilization. And then the fourth lever is this flat fee agreement ratio. And that's the magic lever right there. That's the one that really can set your profitability either, you know, best in class or terrible. It's how you make your decisions around these flat fee agreements. So the average engineer pay, the billing rate, and the utilization, those are the three that we're used to managing. On the utilization, there's a certain amount of billable utilization that we know an engineer's not going to use their time for billing. I came up with about 13 sick and vacation days a year, 6 paid holidays a year, 2 days that they're in training, a couple of 1-hour meetings per week, couple of 10-minute breaks per day, about a quarter hour of non-billable travel a day. And then there's the one that you really can manage, and that's what I call payroll wrap. I expect about a half hour a day of unaccounted for time in their billing. And that's going to add up to 492 hours a year, which is 24% of their year, which will put them about 76% billable average for the year. And on that one, I find a lot of service managers making a mistake. They hear that number, 76% billable, and they think, oh, okay, great. As long as my engineers are billing 6 out of every 8 hours, they're on track. But there's, you know, 22 days a year, roughly, that they're out of the office, right? From those sick days, vacation days, holidays, training days. So that means the days that they are at work, they have to be more, I think it's 82% billable on the days they are at work to account for the fact that 22 days a year, they're not working at all. And that'll give you a 76% average at the end of the year. So I see that mistake happen a lot because I wonder how come I'm not getting the utilization numbers that I'm looking for. Again, that payroll wrap, that unaccounted for time, that wrapper that you put on your day to bring your timesheet up to 8 hours, that's one where I've seen engineers that are averaging 4 and 5 hours a day of payroll wrap, which is just craziness that's not being managed. We want to keep that number somewhere around a half hour a day in order to be able to hit that 75% billable. That's our first three levers. And there's a chart that you can make out of those three, right? You put your hourly rate across the top, you put your engineer pay down the left side, and then you figure out what utilization do you need in order to hit 3X. And when I say 3X, what I mean by that is an engineer needs to bill 3 times their pay.
Okay.
So if I pay an engineer, I'm just going to use the easy number, $60,000 a year divided by 12 is $5,000 a month. So if they're getting paid $5,000 a month and I'm expecting them to bill 3 times their pay, that would mean they need to bill $15,000 a month. And that's not hard to do. Typical billing rate would be usually, I hear everybody tell me everywhere from 120 to 190. So I'm just going to go with 150. At 150 an hour, to bill $15,000 would be 100 hours. So that means each engineer using that billing rate needs to bill 100 hours a month. Well, 2,080 hours a year divided by 12 is 173 hours a month that they have available to work. So if they're at work 173 hours and only need to bill 100 hours to hit 3X, that's 58% utilization.
That seems doable.
I think that's very doable. Yet month over month over month, when I start looking at the real financials, they're not getting anywhere near that. Companies are lucky if they can get 2X. That means that $5,000 a month engineer is billing about $10,000.
And what are the things that are dragging on that number in your experience?
Just inefficiency. Complete inefficiency and just a lack of focus on the managing the business to the financial metrics.
Right.
Let's talk about that fourth lever for a minute. In a time and materials billing world, you say your billing rate, say $150 an hour, and you go out and do 2 hours worth of work. You give your client a bill for $300 and they write you a check and you put $300 in the bank. And that's that time and materials model that we've all managed for so long. Where things got a little messy is when we started doing these flat fee contracts. And the thing I figured out and that helped make me successful in my career was that I can apply what I called the fourth lever to calculating an engineer's total billing. So that fourth lever is this agreement efficiency ratio. And what that ratio is, and quickest way I can describe it, is if the client pays us $1,000 flat fee for the month and we go out and do $1,000 worth of work at our normal billing rates against that contract, we'd be at a 1.0 efficiency. If we go out and do $2,000 worth of work to get that $1,000 the client paid us, we're at a 0.5 efficiency. If we can go out and earn that $1,000 only doing $500 worth of work, we're at a 2.0 efficiency. And what I'm looking for when I'm managing my agreement efficiencies, I'm looking for a 1.25. That means we're doing $800 worth of work to earn that $1,000 flat fee.
And how are you working towards improving that efficiency?
Before I answer that question, if we achieve that 1.25 efficiency, that takes my effective billing rate from $150 an hour to $187.50 an hour.
It's a good jump.
Yeah. That same engineer that at 58% utilization is hitting his $15,000 goal, now he only needs 46% billable to hit that $15,000 goal. And that makes a big difference. If he's that 76% utilized, that same engineer is billing just under $25,000 at, you know, the $150 rate. Hitting a 1.25 average agreement ratio, he's going to go from billing $15,000 almost up to $25,000.
That's a huge difference.
Oh, it is. And when you start, like I said, factoring that ratio against their billing rate, the amount of money that each engineer can bill every month puts you into best-in-class service gross margin. So what are some of the things that you can do? Well, we talk about people, process, and technology.
Can you tell us some more about that?
Yeah. So when we're doing technical services work, the ad hoc, non-contract, break fix work, it's just fraught with inefficiency, right? So you got a bunch of engineers on the bench waiting for a phone call. The phone rings, client says this, something's broken. You pick an engineer and you send them to drive halfway across the county to go service that account. And usually when they get there, they don't have the right parts. So then they got to leave, go find parts, and then go back to fix things. In that model, you're really doing a great job if your engineer can manage billing 2X because there's so much inefficiency. And then usually you're sending an over higher priced engineer to go do menial work that's well below their skill set. In professional services, the margins get a little bit better. It's pretty common that engineers can bill about 2.5 times their pay, and that's all going to be scoped project work. And why do you get better efficiencies? Well, it's scoped. You know exactly, you know, within reason, how long it's going to take before you start the work. You can schedule that work. You can order the parts to be here before you start doing that work. You got, you know, normally larger billing blocks, but you're still kind of stuck in that work 1 hour to bill for 1 hour model largely. Anyway, 2.5 times their pay is pretty easy to achieve. But when we're doing managed services, we're leveraging standardized products that we support. We're leveraging standardized processes. And with those standardized processes, we can leverage lower cost engineers to do the work. We're leveraging tools to do the work, right? We're not sending a person out to install patches on every workstation. We're having our RMM tool install those patches. We're using our tools like AVIC to monitor the networks and give us an advantage to know something might be starting to go sideways long before it goes really sideways. And, you know, some of those fixes in the flat fee world can take us minutes to fix while it's a small indication rather than hours to fix. So for all those reasons, our margins in managed services should be significantly higher than tech and professional services. And if we're managing our agreement efficiency and inside of our ticketing system, we're using those type, subtype, and item to manage what kind of work we're doing, well, then we can use that agreement ratio to stack up our agreements and say, okay, look, here's our agreements at the bottom where we're doing $2,000 worth of work to get paid $1,000. And here's the agreements at the top where we're doing $500 worth of work to get paid $1,000, and start learning what are we doing wrong in these ones where we're doing $2,000 worth of work. And usually we find things like, oh, there's a lot of virus problems, or we're spending a lot of time troubleshooting desktop issues, or we've got a workstation that's got a virus on it that's clogging all the network bandwidth. And by the way, when you get in that environment, the traditional RMM tools aren't going to help you very much, but that's one of the things we love about AVIC is you get so much information on what's going on the network.
So it sounds like first key is to really focus on those managed services contracts. And if you've got break fix work, to try and drop that off your plate and focus almost exclusively or maybe exclusively on managed services, and then look at your levers and how to improve your efficiency within that.
Yeah, I think generally there's a trend when you're doing technical and professional services. There's a pretty heavy roller coaster ride that you ride from month to month on your financials. And the more you get toward managed services, the more you kind of flatten out that roller coaster. But like I said, if you're not managing that fourth lever, I've seen a lot of companies getting in a lot of trouble on these flat fee contracts where they're just doing way more work than they're getting paid. At a 0.5 where you're doing $2,000 worth of work, you're kind of near the technical services kind of margins and profitability. But I've seen companies that have large contracts in the 0.3s, which is technically you're paying your engineers more to do the work than your client is paying you. At that point, you know, you're working for 33% of your normal billing rates at that point.
Wow. And that's not sustainable.
No, it's not sustainable at all. When you're looking at a service department where you're not getting the margins that you're looking for, you got to make some tough choices. And usually what's happening is you're completely overworked because you're not getting enough revenue for the amount of work that you're doing because your flat fee contracts are underwater because of that fourth lever is upside down. That you're thinking about hiring an engineer. I need to hire another engineer. And I advocate that before you make that hire, you fire clients first. Get those hours back from your bad clients so that you can use those hours to service your good clients where you are getting paid appropriately or your flat fees are working out. And there's a freedom that comes with making that decision to let go of that client. So when you decide, I'm not going to hire an engineer. I'm going to get rid of my bad clients first. Right, because I have an hours shortage. I'm going to get rid of these clients that I'm busting my butt out there for, but I'm losing money on them. And by the way, usually those are the clients that you're way over delivering service to are the ones that probably hate you the most, because not only are you consuming your hours, you're consuming their hours to work on all their issues. So it's sort of a paradox that goes on there.
Right.
But when you make that decision, you've got three choices of what to do with that fired client. And it's kind of interesting. Once you decide this just isn't working out, something magical happens. You're suddenly willing to go talk to that client about the fact that they're hurting your business. And you know what usually happens? Usually they don't want to lose you and they agree to pay more. Pay an appropriate amount for what it really takes to service their account. That's what usually happens. But it's not going to happen at all until you get the guts to go talk to them.
Right. And that's interesting because I think a lot of MSPs are afraid to have that conversation with the clients because they're convinced they're going to lose them.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And And I work really hard to convince the C-level clients that they're better off without them. And again, the magical moment happens when you decide I need to hire an engineer. When you have to hire, that's when you're better off firing a client. And then you get the guts to go talk to them and usually find out they're willing to pay appropriately. And now guess what you have? You have the money to hire that engineer.
Parting words of wisdom for team managers who are digging into this stuff, ways to improve profitability.
Know your numbers and manage to them. Yeah, that's the one.
Sounds great. Well, thanks, Rex, for joining us today. It's been very insightful.
Awesome. Thank you.
That was Rex Frank, founder and CEO of C-Level Operations. We went through a bunch of numbers and calculations in our talk today. If you want to review those numbers, you can, of course, visit the show notes at ovic.com/franklymsp/010. We'll have everything that we talked about today there. But in addition to that, we're also going to publish a blog post from Rex that digs even deeper into the math on these four levers, and in particular, the fourth one that we've been talking about, effective ratio. So look for that post on the AUVIC blog at AUVIC.com, AUVIC.com, in a few days' time. And that's a wrap. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a comment on the show notes or writing a review of Frankly MSP on iTunes. We welcome all feedback. We'll be back in your earbuds in a couple of weeks with an interview you won't want to miss. I'll be talking to futurist and New York Times bestselling author Daniel Burris about how to accurately predict what the future holds. Yes, he can do that, and he can teach you how to do it too. Till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Thanks for listening.
Frankly MSP, brought to you by AUVIC Networks, the most efficient and profitable way to manage your clients' networks. We'll be right back.